title of this is When Hierarchy Invades Equality or Egalitarianism Takes a Hit. And I asked Judd if he would join me on this. And right now he's writing in the back, and the trick will be for you to be able to even figure out what he's written. He's been accused of before of writing in Sanskrit. So, but my name is April Owen Larson, and Haswell Judd, who's joining me, is behind the board there, which we won't turn around until about halfway through this time together. But I said this before at the beginning of the week when I told my story of my election and prior to that, but that's the number one thing really I get asked to do when people ask me to speak. They're always kind of interested in that story. And I think the second thing that we constantly get asked when people get comfortable enough to ask us is, you know, what does this mean for Judd? And sometimes they ask about our children too, but particularly people are very interested in what has happened to Judd. Some of you may know that we are both pastors and that we did ministry together for 11 years in the parish. And in fact, this next Thursday will be our 21st anniversary, so we've really been married for a chunk of time. Not as much as some of you, I'm sure, in this room, but nevertheless, we've been together for a couple decades here. And what we are going to try to talk to you about today is actually in some ways harder for me, I see this personally, to talk about than even my kind of personal story, because I think for all women who are in careers, and then also if their career in a sense might affect their spouse's career in dramatic ways, then it really does a double whammy on you as far as how you're feeling about yourself, how you are as a spouse, how you are as a mother. And I would be lying if I pretended that I don't have a lot of struggles that way. So I'm getting into an area here that as the week went on, I thought about trying to back out of. On the other hand, I think if some of us couples who have been really sharing, Judd and I have really been sharing and working together from the very first day of our marriage 21 years ago, if we don't talk openly to other people about that and how sort of the world systems impact that sharing, then it gets difficult for other people to have some freedom to talk and do some experimenting too. I think we do a lot of modeling and support for each other when we actually will talk about these things. So we're going to try to do that today. And I'm hoping that will help you think through some of your own issues in your own lives, and whether you are married or not, how this might impact just our whole view of society and how things are proceeding. Let me just say a little bit about how we met. We met at Wilderness Canoe Base. I was between my third and fourth year of college, and Judd was between his first and second year of college. And Judd already knew that he was going to be a pastor, so he had 7 years of education ahead of him the time that we met. And I had 1 year to finish college. And I was I didn't have a ring on, but I was actually verbally engaged to somebody else when I came to that camp. And halfway through the summer, I was engaged to Judd, and that's a story I won't tell. But anyway, I would be out for 2 weeks and back for 2 days, out for 2 weeks, back for 2 days. Now, if our children would ever do what Judd and I did, I would just totally have a heart attack. But anyway, I brought Judd home to my parents' 25th wedding anniversary. And if you know anything about Wilderness Canoe Base, it's still true there, I understand. Everybody, the guys are not supposed to shave. They take a lot of heat if they shave. And they let their hair grow. And that's just the cool thing to do at Wilderness Canoe Base. So Judd's hair, it was the 60s anyway, but it was, you know, the hair is here. I guess it was early 70s. But anyway, that season, and I brought Judd home to my family, 25th wedding anniversary. and said that would be a good time to meet all of our family, because everybody was there from across the country. My father took me back in the bedroom and said, if you think you're going to marry that hippie, if you think I'm going to finance a wedding for that hippie, forget it. And I, my father...
It's been uphill ever since.
And I said to my dad, whom I adore, I said, Dad, if you make me choose between you and Judd, I'll choose Judd.
Oh, wow.
And so then that really was just minor trauma compared to the trauma for Judd's family that we were going to get married in a year. And I won't even go through all that, but that was really traumatic. And anyway...
He was a baby. He was 19 or something, wasn't he?
He was. In fact, Judd's parents had to sign for us to get married. And
I should say that for our 21st anniversary, which is this Thursday, I'm taking her on a cruise on the Lady Express or whatever it is. That's as close as we're going to get to a cruise.
Yeah,
Tuesday
weekend.
I do remember that time when Judd, when we did meet with Judd's parents, and their purpose was to talk about getting married, and Judd said to me, I know my parents, and if I stand firm, they will give in to this wedding. He said, now don't talk. I did not talk for 4 hours. We got worked over for 4 hours, and when they were finished, I was convinced we shouldn't get married. But I did not say a word. That's hard to believe, those of you who've been around me very long, but it's the absolute truth. So, anyway, then we got married in a year, and I was just finished at Iowa City. And really, really had an unusual experience that I received a job at a Catholic school, which was, you know, a teaching. I know they're hard right now. My sister just finished college and trying to find a teaching position. But it just was incredible at that time to find any kind of teaching job. I found a half-time one the first year at a Catholic school. And when we got married, we lived out in this house far, far away from everything. You had to drive into town. Got up in the morning. We used to get up at 4:45 every morning. And we lived with this old woman in this house. We had to watch Lawrence Welk with her every Saturday night. It's penance for all previous sins. We shared this house with her, so we had kind of different parts of the house. And our kitchen was so far away from the bedroom. It was round and down. And I was very traditional at that time, which you can probably tell by the fact that my last name was Larson. And I thought I should do the cooking. But I couldn't really get up that early in the morning without Judd getting up. So it was, we'd both get up, 4:45, and we'd get dressed, and we had to do everything separate because there was no connection in the house, and we'd come down the stairs and the living room. Then he'd sit and wait for me to do breakfast. That didn't last very long, but I'm just giving you an idea of how our marriage started. And it's really been dramatic changes in our marriage, just in every area, and that's one of the reasons we're sharing this with all of you. I don't know how much. Was that enough? I think I went too long. Go ahead, honey.
You're going to get us through seminary.
I'm getting us through seminary?
Yeah.
Was that part of the deal? Okay, quickly. 2 years there in a Catholic school, and we used to get home. Jenny had Nordic choir. We used to get home about 6 o'clock. And then you have to do supper and try to get to bed at some kind of decent time because you're up at 4:45. And then on Friday nights, we were totally broke. I made $2,000 the first year I was in school. And all of Judd's working in money, of course, went through towards his schooling. And we worked in Dante's at Luther College, which was an evening thing. And we got done about 3 o'clock in the morning. So on Fridays, we worked from, got up before 5, and we worked till 3 in the morning. We'd drive back. And then on Saturdays, we would clean the church, because we had a job was cleaning the church, and we also were Luther League counselors, and I was choir director. And then on Saturday night, we would go to this town and do our laundry, and that was our week. And we thought we were having a ball. We were just nuts. We would, And then we went to seminary, and I should say, when I went to seminary, when I felt a call to go to seminary, I did not know the church was ordaining women. And I checked that out with the professor. It took me 4 hours to get up my courage to ask this professor what he would think about me going to seminary. He said, fine, there's a couple of women at seminary. So Judd and I went together, and that was absolutely unusual. We were the first couple to enter Wartburg together and first to finish together. And through, I think, knowing us, in fact, they said that, through knowing us, several couples, the wife started to finish college while we were there, and a couple started even to go to seminary while we were there, watching us making it. I mean, we were barely making it. Judd and I both worked 30 hours a week on top of going to seminary full time to work our way through our years of seminary. So it was included in our seminary experience was a year at Denver House of Studies, which is a community, which was wonderful but a hard experience, and also a summer at Turtle Mountain Indian Reservation, North Dakota, which was also a blessing but a really difficult experience for us. So that's kind of our history.
And at seminary, of course, we were known as Judd and April. And everybody calls Judd and April, and one time Abasai Shivali, who's from Namibia and was in Dubuque doing PhD work, he called us up and asked for Judd and April, and she answered the phone and said, well, this is April. He says, well, I want Judd and April. And it went together. So
he wanted to talk to Judd, but he thought that that was our name. Judd
and April.
Oh, okay. Well, so then we finished seminary, and we moved into our first parsonage together on Valentine's Day. We're a cozy family, of course. And of course, that was really a real kind of nervous time, finishing seminary, graduating, that whole process of getting a first call and moving in parish and ordination and installation. And April thought she was real nervous because she wasn't feeling real well, and then after all it was over, she realized it was morning sickness, and she was pregnant with twins at the time.
Yeah.
And of course her twins are now bigger than she is. You've seen them around,
Yeah. Maybe,
Katie and Amy. Well, we didn't know we were having twins when we had them. Actually, we went to the hospital, and the first one was born, and the nurse is working with her over on this warming table or whatever, and the doctor yells at her, get back over here, there's another one in there. So that was the first official word that we had. And that was also a shared experience. Now, of course, I didn't have to share having them.
I did complain about that through the whole pregnancy. I wasn't really sharing this part. I think that's kind of peculiar.
They were preemies, and so they would just want to sleep all the time. So I'd get up in the middle of the night and completely strip them down and change their diapers so that they'd wake up enough, and then they'd bring them to April and she would nurse them. And then I have to get a glass of water for her to drink, because you need to drink a lot of water when you're nursing twins. So that was also kind of a group project. At the same time, we were half-time pastors, each called to a parish where normally there was just one pastor. So it was, could call a shared position or whatever. And so for really 11 years, or a little more in Iowa, we worked as co-pastors together in three different parishes, but in the same parish together at the time. So we really shared our work. And we were rather intentional about that. A couple of reasons. One, for family values, we wanted to raise our own children. And we've seen pastor families where the pastor is working all the time, and the children kind of get left behind sometimes. So we wanted to raise our own children. So that's one of the things. Also, the church had no idea what to do with clergy couples. They just didn't have the foggiest idea, so they gave us to the worst call in Iowa at the time because they knew that they couldn't get any other pastor unless they called us. So there we went. So we were in three different calls in Iowa together. I remember one time when the twins were little, I was pushing them in a buggy. This is just a funny story, but down the alley, going to take them for a walk, and these two little boys come by, and one says to me, "Hi, Father." And the other one says to him, "He's not a father, he's got children. So, you know, there's an ecumenical aspect.
I want to say a little bit about laundry because I don't think you're going to say it. I used to do the laundry too when we were first married. In fact, for 6 years of our marriage, I did the laundry, except for when we did it together at the first 2 years. At seminary, I always did it. And then when we had twins, we had cloth diapers. In fact, anytime we traveled, we had an entire back of our tiny little Subaru was completely filled with diapers and diaper pails. And Judd, that's when you start doing the laundry, because he started hauling these huge buckets of diapers that I could hardly lift, and start doing the laundry, and it's really progressed. Now Judd actually does all the laundry in our family. I do remember how to do a little bit of it, but he really does the laundry.
There's nothing quite like the sight of six dozen diapers hanging all over at the same time on the clothesline. The sense of accomplishment is to get hung up. Moving on a little bit, Benjamin was born, our youngest, who's now 9 years old, and he's running around here somewhere. I'm supposed to know where he's at as a parent. That's one of the olden rules, know where your children are at all times. I haven't the foggiest idea where he is. But he was born in 1984 when we were at Old East, or just before we moved to Old East Paint Creek Lutheran Church and Old West Paint Creek Lutheran Church in the northeast corner of Iowa. And it was also that year that April was asked to lead music, be the music leader at the National Women's Convention for the ALC, which was held in Detroit. And this was, maybe you want to say a little bit about that.
Well, I think just, what Judd and I were realizing is that really was the turning point in our relationship. I don't know how to say it to people because now it's getting more normal, and certainly in a community like Holden, there are more couples like Judd and I. But when Judd and I were sharing, there really wasn't any other couple I knew of that were sharing like we were. We didn't even tell people, because we knew that they wouldn't have anything to do with us. If they knew how equal not only our church work was and how equal we did things at home. And it took me years before I could tell even my closest friends. We used to fake it when we had company because I started laundering. I tried to do everything right when we first got married, but just gradually it got so that we, for instance, really, kind of the administrative end of the church was, I kind of did that, but you could do that quietly without people knowing it. And Judd did more of the calling, but part of it was because I nursed all of our kids, and so whenever I could, I needed to have some more time at home in that way. But I did a lot of operating oversight kinds of things in the parish. And so we just finally kind of went, we started moving with what we could do. Judd is just extraordinary. This is kind of embarrassing for me to share. I'm going to share it anyway. Judd can change a diaper, put on a meal, move washer in there. Now, we think women, just women can do this. Well, in our family, the one who can do this and carry on a conversation, handle the parsonage phone, and do about six things at once, the person in our family that can do that is Judd. And April gets extremely focused on something. I'm in the terror of my life as a parent was. I'd be working on something, maybe confirmation or something, be working on it, and all of a sudden I realize that I remember I'm a parent, and I don't have any idea where my children are. And I wish maybe this part wasn't taped. But this is the truth, just a terror, just this gripping fear in my stomach. My goodness, April, you're a mother, and where are your children?
And one time, I should tell us, one time she got into one of these things. Where's Ben? Where's Ben? Well, she was nursing him.
Joan Mull was right there at the time. She said, does this give a new meaning to that text? Will I forget you, Israel? Will a mother forget her suffering? I just want to share that we really were really, really sharing and trying to keep a lot of this. When we had company, I did all of the cooking. All of the cooking. Because we didn't want them to know what was really going on.
Can I ask why you didn't want them to know? I don't quite get that.
Well, it just didn't work. You're talking about a long time ago at that time.
In Iowa.
You're talking about Iowa and rural families.
I'm South Dakota.
Okay, and I remember talking to the head of LSS about this, because in Iowa, everybody who's on a staff, if you are on a staff, you automatically meet with the LSS twice a year, which probably says something about why Iowa, I think, has the best staff relationships of clergy in staff ministry together than probably anywhere in the church. But you had to do that. That's part of your obligation. So we did. We were staff. And one of the things we talked to the head of LSS about was, you know, some of what we were doing, and he said, I think that's very smart, because I think, he said, already what you're doing is so radical where you are, and it was. He said that to press it any further than your people can already see, I mean, they can already can see that Judd's doing a lot of stuff. But, and they could see who was hanging the diapers off and stuff. It was very, very clear. And don't think for one second they didn't know it. And I could tell you stories about that. But anyway, they know all of that. And so he said, don't do any more than you need to do in order to be clear. Don't be dishonest. We certainly didn't lie about it, but we did try to at least put some, it was really set more people at ease if we didn't press everything all the time. It was already, our lifestyle was pressing every parish that we were in, everybody in that parish all the time. And but that's great. You break in at any time. That's great. That's really.
What kind of questions did they ask you? I mean, did males feel pressured because you were doing more domestic chores, and did they express that?
They wouldn't express me feeling pressured, but what I would hear is, well, we share things too. I've changed the diaper. You know,
I tried it once. Yeah.
And there, you know, there are others doing this. I mean, but
we met with an LSS person once, not the head of LSS, on his team consultation. He was talking about he knew exactly what we were dealing with because he vacuumed.
Oh,
that's the last time we went to him, because he didn't have any idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
But I have to say that we were really, you know, I see it now in some other clergy couples and some dual career people, but at the time that we were doing it, we were absolutely alone.
See, I think that's really a key point, because we were doing the same thing, but we were in Chicago, we were in the community, and we had lots of friends who were doing similar things, and there was support for what we were doing. So we could brag about it.
And we didn't hide it. When I talked to some other clergy couples, we didn't hide it like some other clergy couples were hiding it. I mean, the fact that Judd went out with diapers. Mm-hmm. We got together with 20 or 30 clergy couples at a couple of events over the years. And the very first two that we were at, we were the most open. Mm-hmm. And they were the clergy couples in order to survive were doing very, many of them, not all of them, but doing very similar things. Ones that were really equaling the parish. Now, I think a lot of clergy couples, you know, the male takes the lead, which is fine. That's the way they want to do it. But when you have really, where you're really sharing the whole parish piece and you're really sharing the home piece, they were finding it hard. I think the thing that always has amazed me about Judd and all the years I've lived with him is just his self-esteem, which is just incredible for me to be around. And, but we did realize at the point of Detroit, and I don't think we realized it at the time, but as we've looked back, that that was when our lives changed. Because then I became April. And people knew of me, and Judd started to become, for some people, not in our local area, but with some national piece, Judd became April's husband. Mm-hmm. And it just has really increased as I became an assistant and then a bishop. And I think we're trying to talk about and explore for ourselves, and it's probably not fair to you, what this has meant in our lives in the last 4 years, and particularly the last year, to move from, it's not like that now in our house.
Yeah,
I don't know either one of our houses. People come to our house, where is this? Where is your grader? You know, and Judd puts these things where he wants them to be, and then I've got a couple of daughters that put things away wherever they feel like putting them away. So we really got a lot of people doing stuff in the house, but I don't have control of our home. I don't know if this is a big issue for women, but I think it kind of bothers me. I wish I could just work more hours, and I could just eliminate sleep and just handle it all. But I can't. I have had to give up all kinds of things that I don't know what's going on.
So, you know, that's one of the changes that's happened to us in the last years is that for April, she doesn't have a sharing so much in household things. And for me, I don't have the sharing in the work with her. And her work as assistant to the bishop, and now the bishop,
confidential.
A lot of it's confidential, a lot of it is just, and of course we're in, now as a bishop in a whole new synod and all that, so I'm just beginning to have some idea who some of the people are. Really for the first time now, we've got real separate, in significant way, separate areas in our lives. And so, and also with that is that as bishop, there comes in a real hierarchical thrust of that.
We've been trying to figure out what that has been. I think we felt it a little bit as an assistant, but not as dramatically. And I think you can't escape it. You know, we really struggle in this whole new community. I think this is a good discussion, and we're eager for you to talk now. But Holden community, I think, really tries to live out a real equality. I mean, everybody does chores. And I've said that to many pastors. I said, I get so tired of pastors talking about, you know, your gift is washing dishes. I mean, there's a difference between chores and charismata. And we all do chores. And there's just big chunks of time that I'm not home, and there's a lot of time in which I get home at midnight and 1, and I'm up at 4 the next morning, and that's the nature of this kind of work. I think just even the chore dimension has bothered me, that I'm not always there to really do what I consider to be, you know, chores. I'm not talking about gifts here. I'm talking about chores.
Where are the places that you can keep this equality, equal way going, given knowing what you know and the experience you have and the situation you have? Where can you keep it going?
Well, see, this is I think the classic thing when we were working together, which I think illustrates where we were as far as parents and housework and work together in the church, was that our kids, when they needed help, always called parents. Parents! And that doesn't happen very many homes. It's usually mom. Or if it happens to be the dad, now they're asking for Judd. If I'm home for now, I like to take a couple of weeks of vacation a year, and I've done that since I've been an assistant, in which I'm home during the school year, and I'm really parenting for a week, and nobody is in my way. I mean, there's nothing else I have to do. And that's been great, because the kids really, they'll just move in. They'll just seek me. because I'm there and I'm available. It's wonderful for me. I don't know how it is for the kids. I love it. But that calling in trouble for parents or in need for parents, and it was never mom or dad, it was parents. And that changed immediately when I became an assistant. And I'm trying to think where it's more, you know, we're more, it's more just sort of logical division of labor now, and who's home, and like I said, when I'm home for a week then, and during Easter, which is in Senate offices, people don't want to see you at Christmas or Easter. Pastors, unless they've done, people in our family over there, I did all the cooking for almost 5 days. So. And we do have, it's more of that, and I think that's more normal for what most families are doing, where you have more time, you do this, you're here, then you do that kind of thing. We really have had to lay aside the equality of peace. And I think what I can't get a handle on, which really bothers me, as a woman, I said this before to a small group, as a woman, I am not used to having people listen to what I say. And when I became a bishop, people listened to what I said. And it was very troubling. Go into a meeting with some people in your Senate and you'd say something and they'd actually do it. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to having a big discussion. You talk about it for a long time and then, you know, the group makes a decision together and then you go do it. And I think women feel you need to be very persuasive as a woman to get anything done, or you got to talk a powerful man into it. I don't agree with that, but I mean, that's the truth. That's what happens. Is some guy picks up on a committee meeting, then it becomes a good idea. And all of a sudden, I became bishop, and it's just because of the office. People, all of a sudden, you say something, and it happens. And it really, that I know I've been at it for 9 months. I have not adjusted to this. Now, I don't think that would be, I've talked to other bishops about that. I don't think that's such a big shock for male bishops, because most male bishops come out of very big congregations as senior pastor and are used to people doing what they say. And am I being too blunt here, you guys? You're so quiet.
Well, I was going to say, except for my brother who said your words exactly 7 years ago or whatever it was.
You have a brother who's a bishop?
Yeah.
Okay. And he said, do you mind telling me who it is?
Bob Keller. And he said,
Good guy.
It's one of the first things he said to me, I didn't have to worry about what I said because nobody ever listened to me anyway. I have to worry about everything that comes out of my mouth.
Oh, yes. And people, the response, and I think it's just, see, we can say we don't believe in hierarchy, and I don't believe in it. Doesn't matter what you think, Bishop. It just happens to you, and people do one of two things, and I watch this meetings, it's absolutely fascinating to me. Either they just agree with it, or they start to tighten up here, and their faces get a little flushed, and they're really angry because you are being so pushy. And I see, I'm just throwing something out for discussion. You're almost always just throwing it out for discussion. But no, this is the law. This is a ruling of God. And I think it really has, we're trying to sort out, and it's probably not fair to talk to you about this, because we probably should have it sorted out before I come and talk to you, except for that we're still in it. We're in 9 months of this, and it does affect our relationships. And it affects, there were a few clergy women who, when I was elected, our relationship stayed the same, but almost all of my other clergy, even clergy women friends, which I think are just really have it together in a lot of ways. I know what they go through, and I think they're just super fantastic people. Still had to kind of re-check out my friendship with them after I was elected bishop, which was real scary for me. But it doesn't matter what we say. We just keep resorting in the society, because we have a very hierarchical society, and so we're just resorting all kinds of things. And it really affects, this is a great story. I'll tell this one. Right now, the number one fight between Judd and I is praying. Yes. And it's probably the biggest fight we've had since we've been married.
We agree that we should parade.
This is the fight. We have company in our house, and it used to be whoever was on parade. In other words, whoever was working that day parade, or whoever preached, or whatever. Well, Judd says, we can maybe help us through this. Judd says, well, yeah, people really want the bishop to pray. You're not getting any support from Ingrid, I love it. So we've done that. This is really, I'm kind of embarrassed to share this, but I'm going to tell it to you just to show how screwed up our lives are. But, you know, I'll look at Judd and I'll say, okay, no, honey, I prayed last time, so will you pray this time? And so then we sit there and we're doing this back and forth. You know, April, you pray. No, Judd, you pray. And he knows that I will get embarrassed quicker. So that if he holds out, I'll finally do it because I feel so embarrassed of all these people watching us. So
May I ask one question?
Yes.
Is this at a meal time or what?
I know this is not very mature, but this is what's actually going on. It's meal time. We've got other people besides our family present. And we could just do Johnny Appleseed or Come Lord Jesus, which sometimes we do. But sometimes you think, when it's particularly people that you haven't seen for a while, I think it is nice to pray together. That is something that we can just...
We just ask them to join and come, Lord Jesus, be our guest.
Well, yes, and we do a lot of that in our house. But sometimes we pray something else.
Just take turns. Yeah. I'm so sensitive about the pastor. I live in a family.
Is this unfair, Jen? We've got a lot of women here.
I live in a family of pastors. I had to dig in my heels to not be escorted to seminary because the men who are pastors marry women who are pastors. Mm-hmm. I kind of want the people who are not pastors to pray. I'd like to turn to the kids or to...
I grew up in a family of pastors, and my father wasn't a pastor. And I love it when other people, other than pastors, pray.
But I agree, people do want to hear the bishop. And
you could have a designated seat that's the prayer.
The last one there gets to pray in there.
Put down the bottom of your plate.
Partly hospitality, I think, on the prayer thing. But if your guests are guests of you as a couple, as a family, then it's a hospitality question. If it's a business arrangement where they're there because you're the bishop, you know, then you do a business thing. But if you're not doing a business thing, then you do hospitality, and then you have some member of the family.
She's bringing clear thinking into this. We thought that from our sharing some of what we've been through, that maybe in some ways it might have something to do with your life. So these are just four arbitrary questions that are in alternating colors, so you can see the beginning and the end. To maybe get into how some of this dynamic happens in your lives.
This is the best printing I've ever seen.
I'm capable of great things. First one here, and I'll read them. In a two-career family or a dual-career family, or you can put whatever you want in there, what would it look like for a woman and a man to be equal? And it's maybe an awkward question even to think about what that means. But I'll just read through the four, and then we can just open up for discussion. The second one here, what communication dynamics are needed for spouses to work together? And working together as co-pastors is not really a new concept. You've had mom and pop stores, you've got the family farm, there's other ongoing things, and it's been difficult in all those working together. So what communication dynamics are needed? What's the difference between helping your spouse? I mean, you know, helping your wife do the housework. Or taking responsibility. You know, people never ask her when she's with the children, are you babysitting? I get asked, well, I see you're babysitting. Well, you know, if they're the neighbor's kids, maybe, but if they're my kids, you know, I'm just their parent, you know. So that's and that can be with children or housework or whatever. are you helping with? Are you sharing the responsibility for? Another question for a couple that's wanted equality in their relationship, what can happen to upset that equality? There's all kinds of outside pressure, you know, people show up at your dinner table, how do you handle who prays or or whatever it might be in your life. So just to kind of open up for discussion there.
Question I had, Dan.
Okay.
Pastor, Pastor.
Okay.
I want to pledge Chuck and Joel to complete confidentiality on this session. Thank you.
This is beyond my comprehension. This is being confidential.
Okay.
I keep thinking about the bishops of the Catholic Church, which doesn't live too far from in the cross, and how they comprehend all this. Being a married couple and being the bishop of the ELCA. And I'm sure you've been in contact with the Catholic bishops of the Western Wisconsin Diocese. What has been their feeling, or what has been going on in their minds?
Oh, this? This is the one to answer your question, Chuck, but I gotta tell you one more story. This is a great story. I was asked, I didn't know it was such a big deal, but I was asked at the Christian Unity Ecumenical Whoop-De-Doo thing happened to be in Milwaukee this year. And we were having this big affair. And for all of you of certain kinds of backgrounds, I don't really mean to insult you at all, but anyway, this big affair, huge procession, and all the Episcopal bishops and all the Catholic bishops and archbishops, you know, had their 18 layers of clothing on and their whoop-de-doo, and they'd ask me to do some prayers, which I thought just simply, you just come off the pew and you go off and do the prayers, go back down, right? No, this is the first Lutheran woman bishop, you know, and we're so glad that we soaked her into something, so we're going to put her in one of the thrones. There are four thrones there. All the rest of the bishops are over here, and the other bishops over here in rows. And then there's one of the archbishops, a Catholic, and one of the Episcopal on the two major thrones. And here's April on this little throne here. And my feet could not touch. It was really, I was so glad it was only an hour and a half. I needed my stool that I carry with me when I preach, and put my feet on in that beautiful cathedral and I'm throwing them. I'm sorry, that was a very smart answer to your question.
You know, as we talk about equality, I wonder if that term isn't a little bit hard to actually define, because it's always implies it's a precise point, and it seems to me that it's constantly going back and forth. There's a big middle there someplace, and so it appears up there in several questions. So I mean, it seemed like that there must be another term that will do this and do it more comfortably.
Yeah, if you want to respond directly, you don't have to raise your hand. You want to respond directly.
We raise our kids together and work together and have the same job and share jobs and all that stuff. Is the third one down, the turquoise one, it's sort of the fulcrum that you have to get first, you have to grok that, which is that if I'm helping somebody do something, it's their job and I'm just helping. But you have to get beyond that. There's nothing here that's my job, thank you. You know, it's our job. We had these kids together. I made them quit smoking because I said, if you die after agreeing to raise these kids with me, I'm going to kill you. He committed to doing this work, and God damn it, he's going to do it. But then the two purple lines, which are really the related lines and really key ones, the communication dynamics, you have to communicate and it upset the equality regularly without it, but with communication, then you can upset the equality all the time, and it's fine. But you can say, I'm going to work on Harold Washington. I would like to work on Harold Washington's campaign really hard for the next whole year, which means reduced amount of attention to family, childcare, you know,
cleaning, et cetera, can we as a family make that gift to the city of Chicago of my helping to elect Harold Washington? Then if we as a family can give that time to do that, the children are brought in on the decision, the children are told, you know, our family is going to give this to the city of Chicago, we're going to work for these reasons, racism, et cetera, then that's a gift that we all give. Another gift that we gave was nursing our kids. And it was a gift that Jody and I gave to our children. We decided nursing these kids is so important for these reasons that we will support this as a family. Which means that I did less housework or that he did more of this or that. You know, you sort of work out the work. But it doesn't mean you have to always each be equal and there's some kind of a, you know, it's like, it's not like that at all. It's saying, I mean, right now, he's in a grant that lasts for 3 years. We have to think ahead of time. Are we willing to have our life changed in the ways it'll change to act out these next 3 years? What ways will our life change? What commitments will we make that we'll stick to so that he would commit himself to, even though he is in this grant that makes him fly around the country a lot and give speeches?
Which means, well, you're here alone.
Well, that's why I'm here alone.
Yeah.
And so how is that going to change our family life? Well, then we're going to commit to certain things to compensate. So the one thing that we cannot ever give up is our relationship with each other and our relationship as co-parents to our children. So how are we going to find time to do that and talk about that and continue that? Because I can't solve the problems of our children alone, and neither can you. I mean, maybe I could if I absolutely had to, but I don't want to. And I'm much better working on problems around our children and ourselves as a couple. We're two of us doing it together. And so we do, communication is the key when we talk about those things, but then we make a deal and we say, okay, that's it. And that's fine. You know, I can do less, I can do more, he can do less, he can do more, but we can make a deal.
Can I ask a question again? Kind of where you're coming from, are you a bishop's wife, or do you? I'm curious.
No, I'm not a pastor or anything like that. I'm just my husband and I both are university professors, but we're both committed to being activists in the church, which takes. I mean, before I agreed to be the chair of the church of the board for church and society in the ELCA, I quickly went and phoned my husband and said, this is going to take a lot of time. It looks like I'm going to be elected. What do you think? Let's talk it through. Fortunately, the election went overnight, so we had an hour on the phone to talk about it. But that meant, can he support us giving that gift to the church? But it's our family giving the gift to the church. It comes out of all of us. That I have to be gone from the home more, et cetera. And so together we made that decision.
And I said this in my story, but I want to say too, Jed really was the one who actually physically stood over me and made me fill out papers to be assistant to the bishop in Southeastern Minnesota Synod. I had been nominated for over a 3-year period in various synods asking me to consider being an assistant, and I just could not conceive of myself doing that. I could not conceive of what that would mean for our family. It was just an impossible leap of imagination for me to handle. And you know, I look at sort of the critical points in my life of having to really struggle faith, emotionally in every way. That was a real critical time. Finally, Judd just stood over me and said, fill this out. And I did, and you know, it changed our lives.
I'm the head of the house, you know.
And the same, I felt the same tons of support from Judd, really more activist, I think.
I think one thing you said early on is kind of key here, though, April, and that's self-esteem. All pursuits and not a lot of ego involvement in certain kinds of things. And yeah. I would have to say that's been the gift in my marriage. I happen to be married to somebody who's never threatened by any circumstance or thing I do, or even embarrassing thing I say.
Is that broader than you want to give her, David?
Well, I mean, I have lots of friends, some of who are in you know, I'm still in good marriages too, but the thing I noticed that I think is different that I feel real lucky about,
yes.
Only a matter of luck, because I didn't know that in the beginning, but someone who really likes to see you do a good thing and do it well and gets some kind of mutual appreciation from that. I'm thinking about it in terms of my writing life. It's taken me a lot of years to even say that I'm a writer. But it didn't take David very long to say that I was a writer. And I have a friend in my writing group whose husband does not see her as a writer. She's fantastic. But they are both in English literature. She happens to also be a good visual artist, and she gets support from him in her visual art life, but not as a writer. And she thinks she's a very poor writer. You know, the person that she wants the most response from, she never gets it from.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, it does have to do with not being threatened by someone else's accomplishment.
Well, that's and I want to say, as a woman too, I get a lot of visibility because of what's happened. But Jed has always gotten the most support.
Well, I'll speak to that. You know, as a man, when I, you know, change diapers or take care of kids or cook or whatever, I mean, there's some payoff in that. You know, amongst any feminist groups, you know, or amongst even family-oriented folk, you know, this is a positive thing. So for me to do those kind of things, there is some.
You get some special
M&Ms. Yeah, right. There's I'm not sure how you cash them in exactly, but you do get
Are you having spoken, have you asked what has happened to your ministerial career since you made the move to Wisconsin?
Oh, that's, yeah, that's...
That was on the sheet, didn't get covered here.
Okay. Well, what happened when she went to Rochester, Minnesota as assistant to the bishop, of course we all moved along, and and I was, you know, really was in a period of struggling because it's politically, there's a real political problem with putting a spouse of a Synod staff person in a call, you know. It's gonna look, I mean, not that it's necessarily a real problem, but it's gonna look fishy, you know.
It's fishy unless it's absolutely that 100% of the pastors do not want that call no matter what.
Yeah.
That's, and I say that very frankly, that's very honest.
Yeah, so for our time in Rochester, you know, I just kind of, that was tough for me. I really floated around a bit.
And Judd is just a great pastor, and people know that, and Bishop Nicolmo would always say, you know, we ought to put Judd's name in here. Well, we can't do that because... Well, we should. No, we really can't because we'll get a lot of heat about that. So when I moved to La Crosse, and I wouldn't have done this if I hadn't had 3.5 years of watching what happened to Jeff. And when I came to La Crosse, I didn't have an assistant. And I decided that somebody wanted to work with Jeff. They couldn't talk to me, and I could not meet with a call committee because I can't be objective about my husband. I had nobody else to do it for me. And I had 3 different pastors come and approach me. Jed wanted to do half time, which is about 30 hours a week for a pastor. And that's what he wanted to do. And I had 3 different pastors come up to me in the course of almost the first week I was there asking if they could have Jed. And I said, if you want to have Jed, you need to talk to him, and do not talk to me until you have something that I have to sign. I said, I just can't be objective about my husband, and I don't have an assistant to do it. And Judd received a halftime call in a large church in La Crosse. And he's gotten some heat about it. I've gotten some heat about it from some pastors. And I'm really glad that we did it because you can't, it's a lose-lose situation, and you might as well just, there's a good pastor of the church that ought to be doing ministry. Just let it happen and take your lumps, because it was completely done apart from me, and that pastor approached Judd, and that's, I just left it at that. I tried to talk that pastor into interviewing some more people. He said, I know exactly what I want. Judd is exactly what I want, and this is what I'm going to do, and I will not interview anybody else. I, it would have been better for me if he would have, but I just decided, I'm not going to mess with this. And that's what happened. And I think that's the only thing you can do. If you talk to Herb Chilstra, Sherman Hicks, Wayne Weisenbuehler, are all married to pastors in their synod, they'll tell you the same thing. It's just a nightmare, and there's no good way to handle it. It's just a lose-lose kind of a deal. We've taken so much of your time, people. I hope it was some fun for you. This is a little bit heavier. I've had a few sessions before that were more, a little bit lighter.
Leave us in a song.
Yeah, well, there's enough information given here that we could talk for another 2-3 hours.
Said leave us in a song.
Yeah, unless you want Jed to put us in the song.
I thought about that too, you know, bring a guitar. I don't think all of you know it. I can't, I'm just completely blank right now. Do you have a song you'd like to sing?
Yube Late Deo.
Oh, some of you know Yube Late Deo. You want to try it?
Sure.
We shall overcome.
Oh. Thank you, people, very much.
Thank you.